Hello, this is Bixby. Welcome to the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast. Here is your host, Roger Kibbe.
Hello, Bixby Developer Chat listeners. Today, I thought I'd talk with Sarah Andrew Wilson. Sarah is the Chief Content Officer and part of the founding team of Matchbox.io. Sarah, please introduce yourself.
Hi, thanks for having me on. This is quite the honor. I think the first time I met you, Roger, was a year ago this week at Voice Summit in New Jersey, pre-pandemic, of course. So it's an honor to be here.
Well, great. Yeah, different times then. We're certainly in new times now. And I do remember meeting you, and I've admired everything you guys do. Tell me more about your history. You've been with Matchbox for a while, but tell me a little bit about what you did before Matchbox.
Yeah, so I spent many years in the music business. So my whole background is as a musician. I'm a classical flutist and have degrees in, you know, flute performance, and spent many years as a performing musician. Every musician also teaches. So I spent many years as an educator, and then also as a tour manager, as a school administrator, lots of different roles before I came to Matchbox. But I came to Matchbox about 3 years ago, part-time, and then came on full-time about 2 years ago.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you about music and voice and how they intersect.
Yeah.
But before we do that, I would love to talk about Matchbox. I think a lot of listeners know who Matchbox is, but can you tell me who Matchbox is? What do you do?
Yeah. So Matchbox is a company that was founded in January 2017 by our founder and CEO, Joel Wilson. And we now have a portfolio of 16 voice applications across platforms. So, of course, on Samsung Bixby and Google Assistant and Amazon Alexa. And some people might know our portfolio through some of our games and education experiences like Question of the Day and Find My Phone, Guess My Name, Kids Quiz. But we really try to have a full range of experiences available for everyone, for all ages. So games, education, wellness, and utility skills.
Yeah, I love your portfolio, and I'm a dedicated user of Question of the Day. And
thank
listeners,
you.
I'm going to play, well, thank you. Yes, I'm going to play a little clip of me attempting Question of the Day.
Hi, Bixby. Ask Question of the Day.
Welcome back. Here is today's Question of the Day. The topic is arts and entertainment. It is worth 3 points. Which Broadway musical starts with the line, Nonsinganyoma? Bajithi Baba? You can choose from A, The Lion King, B, Mary Poppins, C, Hamilton, or D, The Phantom of the Opera.
The Lion King.
Spot on. You have earned your first arts and entertainment badge and 3 points. Debuting in 1997, The Lion King is Broadway's third longest running show in history. Based on the 1994 animated Disney movie, the musical tells the story of a young lion named Simba, who is preparing to succeed his father, Mufasa, as king of the Pride Lands. You are with the 73% of users who answered this question correctly. You have earned a total of 7 points. You've earned a bonus question. Would you like to answer it now?
Yes.
Okay. Here is your bonus question. The topic is history. It is worth 5 points. What First Lady of the United States had Congress declare the White House a national museum? You can choose from A, Barbara Bush, B, Nancy Reagan, C, Jacqueline Kennedy, or D, Hillary Clinton.
C.
You have 2 correct answers in a row. You have earned your first history badge and 5 points. Jacqueline Kennedy began a complete restoration of the White House that captivated the American people and set a standard of scholarship and professionalism that has influenced First Ladies ever since. You are with the 53% of users who got this one right. You've reached a new milestone. You've already collected over 10 points. Great job. Stimulate your brain every day with the question of the day.
So that was my attempt at the question of the day. Questions and answers. I know if you get it right, there's a bonus question, but if
yes.
You don't get it right, you got to wait till the next day. And I got to tell you, sometimes that's frustrating. I'm like, oh, I want that second question.
Oh.
So it's really an addictive experience in that way. I love what you guys do with it. Tell me more about that. I think that's what you're most well known about, question of the day.
Yeah.
Tell me about how you come up with some of those questions, because I love them and it seems so well done.
Thank you. Thanks for playing, first of all, and thanks for enjoying it. So yeah, our inspiration for the content comes from lots of different places. So I read a lot, just articles, websites, whatever, just throughout my day. And then if something seems interesting, if someone says something about an octopus having three hearts, then I Google that. I'm like, do octopuses really have three hearts? What? And then go from there. We try to find multiple sources that corroborate that information. And then we dive in a little bit. And each question has a factoid attached to it. So after you guess what the answer might be, then we try to help people learn a little bit more about that topic. We find things that are intellectually interesting to us and we get excited about. So then we try to get the user excited about that too by, you know, through the factoid.
Yeah, that's one of the fun things about it. It's not only kind of competition, can I get that question right and get that desired bonus question, but you also learn something. So it's fun and educational at the same time.
Thank you for that, because that's exactly what we're going for. We want you to learn. The tagline is learn something new every day. And hopefully we make it fun along the way. And if you want competition, we can give you that. If you want more questions a day, we can give you that through our trivia club. But the overall experience for anyone is just to learn something new.
So it sounds like you're the one who creates a lot of those questions and answers.
That's right. And just recently, we've expanded out to have a content team that helps me. So a team that's spread out amongst different locales and who speak different languages and who help me bring in localized content. So we're trying to make it fun and educational for people all around the world. So one thing that's been interesting in creating this content that I hadn't really thought about until we really dove into question of the day is that history is different depending on who's speaking, right? So history to Americans is very different to what history is in Brazil, to what people in France know as history. There are certain facts, like in science, the three parts of a comet, those kind of things are the same throughout the world. But things like history and arts and entertainment and literature, people know differently depending on where they are in the world. So we're trying to localize the content in that regard right now.
Oh, interesting. So if I'm here using Question of the Day versus, let's say I was in UK using Question of the Day, maybe you get a question about 4th of July. Maybe that wouldn't be popular in UK, but
yeah, exactly.
You'd use different terminology or might even be a different answer, because you're absolutely right. History is written by who writes it, right?
Exactly.
Or the history is written by the victors, it's been said, but there's all kinds of viewpoints there.
Yeah, exactly. So history questions about World War II are interesting to those who were involved, but there's many, many countries and cultures around the world who were not involved in World War II, and that's not part of their general, it's not what you learn in school. You might learn a little bit about it, but there's many other things that you might learn about in your history classes based on where you are in the world. But yeah, and also the terminology is interesting. We wrote a question about, this is actually for a kids quiz voice experience, that was, the question was something like, what does a baby go through 3,000 of in a year? And in the US, the answer is diapers, but in the UK, they say nappies. So we had all these children saying nappies, and we kept marking it wrong, those poor kids. So we eventually had to make nappies a synonym that was an acceptable answer.
That makes sense. Yeah. So how many countries and how many languages is Question of the Day available in?
So we're in four languages right now. So English, Spanish, French, and Brazilian Portuguese. And I've actually lost track of the number of countries. So we're in the dozens right now. So countries that speak those languages, that's where we are.
That's awesome. Well, I think we could talk all about Question of the Day and content creation. And I want to talk to you a little bit more about that process. But I want to back up a little bit and ask you about Matchbox and the founding of it. It sounded like you were an early member of the team. Can you tell me about the founding of Matchbox, how it came about?
Yeah, so our founder and CEO, Joel Wilson, was a consultant that had many different clients. And this is back in January 2017. And so his whole background is data analytics. So he was in between clients, as every consultant can probably appreciate, and had like a week or two between clients and decided to purchase an Alexa device, an Amazon Alexa device, and spent those like 2 weeks just trying to tooling around, trying to figure out how it worked, what it was all about. Is this the future? What is this? And he created something called Daily Poll just in those 2 weeks, and he launched it. And it was supposed to be like a daily, just what sounds like daily poll, but it was focusing on politics. And so there would be new content every day. So he was really thinking about retention from the very beginning. But how do you get people to come back to this each day? So there would be new content every day. It would ask you for your opinion. People love to be asked for their opinion, right? So the idea was great on some sides of it, but then he quickly realized that politics is kind of polarizing, and no matter how you phrase certain things and asking people about it, it can turn into a negative experience if you don't word things the right way. So then from there, that remained live. And from there, he decided to make something that was less polarizing. And that's where Question of the Day came from. So from the very beginning came Question of the Day. And then right after that came three questions, which, as you might guess, instead of just one question a day, you get three questions a day. And that was the real test in the very beginning, seeing how Question of the Day fared against three questions, to see how, if people preferred like a binge experience where you get a whole bunch of trivia right away, or if they prefer kind of a FOMO experience where, like, if you don't show up the next day, you're going to be missing out on something. So from the very beginning, there was Question of the Day. We still have Question of the Day and three questions available. Daily Poll is taken down after some time, which is important, which for any developers that are listening, it's very important to admit sometimes you just need to pull those experiences from if it's not working too well. So let's see, we had Question of the Day, three questions. And then about 6 months in, he realized I have to create four questions or five questions every single day for these two voice experiences. And he became kind of overwhelmed with the content side of things because he was working on the back end. And so that's when he asked me, knowing my background in education and just I geek out over facts and that kind of thing. So he asked me if I'd be willing to help him just on weekends in my free time. So for about a year, I did that just in my free time, thinking what I thought was interesting content. And then in 2018, a year later, things just really started snowballing and things got very popular. And we started adding trivia club and monetization opportunities. And that's when, for me, that's when I decided to come on full time to end my career in the music business and just focus on this full time.
That's great. So is Question of the Day your most popular voice experience?
For sure. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
We've got millions of users. Like I said earlier, like in dozens of countries around the world. By far, it's the most popular. And I think it's just hopefully that the content is intriguing enough and we try to make it where anyone can have success with it and that there's brand new content every day that you're not going to reach an end and you've experienced the entire app. Now it's time to move on to something else. We try to create a little bit of that FOMO.
Yeah, it sounds like from the beginning, there's been a focus. So Joel Wilson started the company and he had a focus on content.
Yeah.
And now then it got overwhelming.
Yeah.
And so you joined and now you have a whole content team. That's great.
It
keeps it fresh.
So we actually think of ourselves, this is counterintuitive, but we think of ourselves as a content company and not a tech company. We use different technologies to provide content to people of all ages. And we do that throughout our portfolio of 16 voice experiences. So, yeah.
I love that. So you're a content company, not a voice company or not a technology company. I think that's a really healthy way of looking at it. Sarah, you and I were chatting a little bit before the podcast started about the technology innovation in the industry, but also content. And I think we were both kind of agreeing and nodding that content is so important. Content is really king. If you have fresh, great content, you can have simple tech behind it and it can be compelling. You guys are such a great example of that.
Well, thank you. No, I remember. So back when I first met you at Voice Summit, you gave a presentation for developers all about Samsung and Bixby. And in that, you said, content, content, content. And I was like, yay, he's spot on. Because I think at least in the beginning, as people were developing voice experiences, it was very easy to get caught up in the technology side, which is very exciting because it's a new technology or newish technology. And it's neat to see how creative you can get with that side of things. And in the beginning, it was easy to forget about providing something of value. The content is really where people find the value in these types of experiences. So that's, yeah, I guess that's why we really focus on it. Yeah.
It's interesting because I see a lot of voice experiences and I've helped with our review team and I see what they review. And so I sit at a different kind of perch where I can see a lot of things that people have submitted. And I will tell you over and over again, I see things where I'm like, wow, this is a gifted technologist who I can see spent many, many days and hours and weeks building this experience. Mm-hmm. And that's so cool. I love what they built. And then it felt like they, on the content side, it was, oh my gosh, I need content. And gosh, the last few minutes, the last few days, they threw together content and then it's not a compelling experience. Whereas something like Question of the Day, and I mean, I think any developer would see it, realize that from a technology perspective is not a complicated product, but that's not what it's about. It's all about the content and keeping it fresh and interesting and new. And I think the industry still, people get, it is wonderful to build amazing technology, but if nobody likes your technology or nobody uses it because the content around it is there, it doesn't work.
Users don't care about the technology. Yeah. They literally don't care. They just want to have a good experience, a helpful experience. And so it's, again, it's like counterintuitive. You have a lot of really great technically designed experiences designed for people who don't care about how great the technology is. So it's really important that whatever the user cares about, that's what you're providing for them. You're providing them with a useful and helpful experience. And that I really think that goes back to the content.
So with Matchbox, how many people, what's your mix of people working on pure development versus content?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think our mix goes back to us thinking of ourselves as a content team. So we have 10 people on a daily basis working with us. And then we pull in contractors based on the project if we're developing something new or if we're trying to dive in deeper someplace. So we have three developers, three really exceptional engineers who are top of their game working with us. And then the other seven are content working with. So we have translators and interpreters on the content team. We have we had this new podcast, Question of the Day podcast. So we have the hosts for that are also developing content, of course. And then we have our producer and an intern as well that are all working on the content side. So it's like a lean, mean machine of 10 people who I'm just really thankful they're all super good at what they do. That's like the number one piece of advice that I can give as people are growing their business is just find really amazing people. They make your life so much easier.
Yeah. And people you want to work with and it's fun to work with and you enjoy. And that's such a key critical thing is work with people who are smart, driven and motivated and fun to work with.
And fun to work with. Yes.
Yeah. Totally. So 70% of the people build content. I think listeners, you got to think about that because I think that that is such a powerful statement about how content is king. You need to spend time, energy, and effort on building content. And Matchbox is by any measure, one of the most successful companies in the voice industry. And you've built it by building great content. And so right, users don't care about the tech. They care about the experience. And so the tech is there to make the experience work really well. But the content is there to really make the experience great. Tell me about, so you've had Question of the Day has been live for quite a while and three questions and that. But my understanding is many of these, you keep on refining and fixing and working on these experiences. So you're still building and thinking about how to improve question of the day, three questions, et cetera. Am I correct?
Yes. You're the first person to ever ask me about that. And I think that's a key element to success in the voice space, and probably any business, actually, if you expand it out, is you can't just create something, launch it, and then say, well, that's it. It's now up to the users. You have to continue refining, getting feedback from the users, listening to the users, as painful as sometimes that is, to hear that reviews or negative feedback, but to set aside your ego and listen to that, and then figure out, how can we make this even better? Are enough people saying, we really like your experience, but we really wish it did this, or we really wish it did that? Can you meet those requests? And then hopefully you're using your own experience every day. We try to do that as much as possible, because every day I hear something a little different and I'm like, oh, actually we need to fix it. Even with question of the day that's been live, you know, since January 2017, we're still refining it. And I would say 90% of my day is working on refining something in our portfolio. It's not 90% of my day is not on creating something brand new. And I actually kind of miss that. I love creating new experiences in that whole process. But 90% of my day is just refining things and working with the team, not just the content team, but the entire team on a fan notice this. What can we do to address that? Or some update was made by the platform. Uh-oh, this one thing doesn't work anymore. What can we do to address that?
So you're listening to your customers. That's like business school 101, right? But I think people forget is you listen to your customers and you constantly refine. And I am not surprised at all, because going back and you think about some of the great companies always listen to their customers. And if you think of in the gaming industry, they spend a massive, and I'm talking the traditional gaming industry, but this comes over to voice gaming, a massive amount of time observing their users' behavior and then tweaking and editing and changing and modifying and make the smallest little things to make the experience better and better and better. And I think one of the challenges we have in the voice world is there's this tendency for people to release something. Oh, it's so cool.
Yes.
And go, let the world, they'll enjoy it. And then they move on to the next big challenge, which frankly, I get it. It's more fun and exciting to build anew.
It's totally. Oh, exactly. It's so exciting to have a new idea and to build it. Yes.
But in order to make a really great experience, you got to constantly iterate and build on it. I used to joke that if you got something 50% right out the gate, you were amazing.
Right?
And so you got to build on it and build. And I think that that's another great thing that I'd love to see people more in the voice industry too. It's not about releasing it and getting out the door. That's step one.
Then
there's step to infinity of listening and observing the behavior of listeners and users and refining it and making it work better. And that's the hard in the trenches work, right?
And so one thing I just thought of is we're actually going through the entire portfolio right now as a team, as an overall team. And even for experiences that have been live for 2 or 3 years, and we're going through as fresh users for ourselves, but we're also, I don't know if you can beta test after something's live, but it's like post beta testing. We're putting together groups of people to use these experiences 2 years in to have that fresh experience, to get their fresh kind of first impression for them. And then using that feedback on how to tweak things. And I do want to reiterate that you have to set aside your ego in listening to feedback. It's very hard. And sometimes I just have to take a break and not read user feedback for a couple of days. But some people just aren't very tactful in the feedback that they provide in reviews or whatever, but they're leaving a review or they're giving you feedback because they care. If someone doesn't care about your experience, they're just going to move on and not provide that feedback. So I guess that's a big piece of advice I try to give people is put aside your ego, really listen to what people are saying, and then see if you can tweak things to make things even better because they're actually helping you with it.
Wow, that's great advice. Yeah. Bite your tongue.
Yeah.
So those reviews that can be awfully, let's say, blunt, even impolite.
Yes.
Right. And you're right. You're so right. If they spent the time to leave a review, they care. They want their experience to be better. You're right. If somebody doesn't like it and doesn't care, they're just going to leave and they're not going to spend time leaving a review. There's extra work involved there. So anybody who leaves a review should be listened to. Even if you bite your tongue and your baby, the thing you've worked so hard on.
It's your baby. Exactly.
Is now they're criticizing and saying it doesn't work. But that's really great advice. Hey, wanted to talk about, so you guys acquired Aperlo. Am I pronouncing that right? Is it Aperlo?
Aperlo, yeah.
Yes. I think it was late last year.
Yeah.
Tell me about that acquisition.
Oh gosh, yes. This was a fascinating process and a really exciting one. So for those who are listening, Aperlo was founded by Jess Williams and Oscar Mary, who are two just brilliant, extremely smart, passionate people, and built a portfolio of voice experiences that are super creative. Long before I met Jess or Oscar, I loved Animal Rescue, which they created. It was like one of my favorite voice experiences. And to this day, I just love it. It's just charming and educational. It's an interactive story. Each story is about 45 to 60 minutes long. And there's voiceovers, there's sound effects. It's just brilliant. And they're also known for Find My Phone and Guess My Name. And both of those I was a big fan of. And we just had various conversations at different conferences and all in the year leading up to the acquisition. Matchbox and Aperlo seemed to have kind of similar values and similar goals in what we were trying to do with voice technology. And it just seemed to make sense, I guess, for the acquisition. The stars all aligned in November of 2019, so kind of recently, and everything came together then. So we acquired, I think, 12 voice experiences from them, and that helped us flesh out our portfolio.
Yeah, I can see how their experiences were super, I was going to say complimentary, but there's a synergy. Synergy is the better word. Between what you built, because they're very focused on content and making great content. And they're generally pretty simple, but they work super well.
Yeah.
And they're content focused and that. And so I can see how there was a meeting or melding of the minds there that made sense. Yeah, that's great. I was excited to see that because I think it's an indication of a growing and maturing industry when you start seeing some M&A, right? I think that's natural. And I expect to see more of that in industry because I think it's just a natural evolution. As some big players get bigger and some small players may struggle, but they may have amazing things that just need the kind of marketing push.
You know, I'll add that we take great responsibility. It was a little scary to now be responsible for these experiences that I had long admired. And now it's up to us to continue kind of that legacy. And we take great responsibility in that. I told both Jess and Oscar at the time, like, we're going to try to do the absolute best we can with this because their portfolio has such integrity and we want to continue that on, you know?
Yeah, no, I attended a talk that Jess gave, I think it was last year, or maybe the year before. Sometimes they blend together. And it was great. She was really motivational. And I loved the way she thought about creating things and our creative process. Really, really amazing. I use the term marketing, and you guys are pretty good at that. Can you tell me? And I think one of the challenges that we hear about in the voice industry is about discovery. Nobody can find things, and often the finger is pointed back at the platform makers, the Amazons and Googles and Samsungs there. And I certainly think on the platform side, there's a bunch of things that could be done discovery-wise. Mm-hmm. But I also think, to me, people forget that you need to market things. Tell me about what you do marketing-wise.
Yeah. So I totally understand where people are coming from with the discoverability and the whole discovery issue. And there are, like you said, there are things that the platforms could be doing better. And I can see that things are starting to improve in that area. But my reaction is, okay, if the platforms are doing X and I'm not being successful in having people discover what I've created, what's my option here? Am I going to sit back and say, oh, the whole system's broken. I have this brilliant product, but the platform's not going to promote it for me. So I'm just going to sit back and complain about it. Or am I going to take the bull by the horns and say, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure people know about this? And for us at Matchbox, Joel has a background in data analytics, and that extends to marketing analytics as well. My background is in the creative, and we kind of actually think about that as our DNA. It's data analytics combined with the creative. So we try anything and everything. There's a lot of trial and error. As with any business, you just try everything to see what works. And a few things that have worked well for us include social media. So our Facebook page alone has about 18,000 followers for Question of the Day in particular. We also have pages for Kids Quiz and a few other experiences. And for Question of the Day, the content for Question of the Day and the voice experience lends itself very well to social media because there's new content every day. And in social media, you need to have new content constantly. So that has worked very well for us. That we have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages. So there's lots of different information that you can pull of what of your users over here and how can you find them elsewhere, right? So you might be able to find them on social media. We have started a podcast that is hopefully a new way for people to discover the voice experience. So if you're really into podcasts and you stumble across Question of the Day with Murray and Tamika, and they're talking about hopefully this interesting subject matter, and then they mention, come try out Question of the Day on your voice speaker. That's another way of reaching people, right? And then we now have a brand new website called askqotd.com, kind of extending the voice experience online. But that's also another way of discovery. So if people are just stumble across, they're Googling something about the octopus that has three hearts, they might come across our article about octopuses. And on there, we mention the voice experience. And then we mention social media. So everything is just kind of intertwined. So I think for us, what's really worked is that we're not thinking the voice experience is the bulk of what we do, but that we're not just completely reliant on, I guess, the platforms and letting people know about us. We're trying everything to try to get people to play, to learn about us. There's a lot of things that we've tried that didn't work. So you just kind of say, oh, that didn't work so well. So you got to move on.
Well, isn't that marketing? Throw all the spaghetti against the wall and then a few strands stick, right? Yeah. And then you keep on going, keep on throwing.
Keep going. Right?
And and you get a little better. Next time, more strands stick. I think that's just classic marketing, is there's a bunch of effort there. And you got to realize that some of the effort just won't work, but some of it will. And you build on what works, and then new things come out, new channels and new ways of doing that. So I want to ask you about AskQODT, questionoftheday.com. I didn't know that existed. Can I play the game on the web then, or is it just marketing material for
So it's a great question. So we just launched it in just a couple months ago, and the podcast just launched in March as well. So podcast was in March, website I think was in May or so. So the way we use it, so we use it as discovery, but we use it, so you play the voice experience, then you go to our social media page to discuss with other fans, so 20,000 fans on Facebook, that we post the daily question from the day before, so there's no spoilers, and then they all discuss it, but then we provide a link over to the website so that if you were really interested, again, in why an octopus has three hearts, you can click over, and we have an article that provides a lot more information than we were able to provide in the voice experience. So instead of just a two or three sentence factoid that we have in the voice experience, the website now has a whole article. And we'll link over to videos about the octopus. We'll link over to have photos about the octopus. And then on there, like I said, we're linking back to the voice experience now with quick links that Amazon Alexa just announced. We're linking back. We're linking to the podcast on multiple podcast platforms. And all of those are also pointing back to the website. So we're learning as we go along, right? So there's a brand new post on the website every single day. And we just keep tweaking and seeing what people seem to like.
I love that. I love that you're using podcast, web, voice all together in this kind of virtuous circle.
Yeah.
You may discover us in one place and maybe you stay there. We're mm-hmm. trying to get you to go the other place and use that. And I love that you're doing something on the web because I'm actually really bullish on voice in the web. I do think there's a ton of opportunity for voice enabling things in the web. If I want a voice experience, I should be able to talk to whatever my tech is in front of me. And if that's a web browser, I should be able to talk to the web browser. I think that's the future where it becomes a little bit more, there's a voice interface for many, many things, where it makes sense. Hey, a UI absolutely has use and value and sometimes is better than voice. So Sarah, I want to shift gears a little bit and go back to your background. You have this background in music, which I thought was intriguing that this musician and educator for music then switched over to voice. Where do you see those two worlds coming together, music and voice?
Yeah, if you had told me 3 years ago that there was a lot of overlap, I would not have believed you at all. But if you think about it, that voice technology is aural, right? Using your ears, and it's manipulating sound to help someone's life be more enjoyable or easier. That's what music does. So musicians have trained ears. We spend a lot of time training our ears, not just learning your instrument or learning how to sing, but you learn how to train your ears to hear subtleties in sound and nuances in sound. One example is you can have a violinist play, I don't know, a note, let's say D on the staff, and that violinist can actually play that D 15, 20 different ways to make it sound very different. And not even adjusting the frequency or the pitch of the specific note, but just adjusting the overtone series or adjusting the sound, making it rounder, making it flatter, making it fuzzier. And so I have that training, as all musicians do. And that, I think, extends itself really well to working with voice because we can hear things that need to be fixed, maybe a little faster than other folks can. Another thing I was thinking about is musicians are natural collaborators. You have to be able to collaborate with others because very few musicians have a solo career. Very few musicians are able to travel the world and fill a whole audience or fill a whole concert hall based on their name alone. Most musicians have to collaborate and have to bring their best foot forward into an ensemble of some sort, in a chamber ensemble or into a rock band or into, so you have to collaborate with others and be accepting of other people's ideas because you're creating a sound together. And that extends directly into working on a team, right? Working on a team in an office. So at Matchbox, I think that really extends well. We have, did I mention this earlier? I think like 70%, 7 of our 10 daily staff members have a musical background. I just think this is fascinating. It didn't even like, we weren't even planning that. It just happened to come out that way, that they might not be professional musicians right now. Some of them are, but I think there's just something about how musicians use their brains that lends itself well somehow to the voice arena.
That's great. So is there a Matchbox band?
Someone asked about that. We should actually, we should form one. We've got two or actually three bass players. We've got a pianist. We've got a flutist, myself, of course, clarinetist, two clarinetists. So yeah, we can have
I'm looking forward to the Matchbox band.
If we ever have a conference in person again, we'll see what we can do.
Be careful. I might mention that to Bradley or Pete. But that makes a lot of sense, that kind of some of the thinking around the oral awareness and thinking, of course, translates over to voice. I'm wondering about your thoughts about the kind of industries combining in the way. I've been a little surprised that musicians and YouTubers and the creatives of the world haven't, I'll say, adopted voice as fast as I would, because I think, wow, what a cool thing. Talk to your favorite musician or let them, something interactive. I'm wondering what your thoughts are around the combining those two worlds.
Yeah, so it's interesting. This is related. I'll get back to the music part in a minute. But when we started our podcast, it started as what we called a flashcast at the end of the Question of the Day experience. So we have these amazing hosts. One's a Tony Award winner. The other is a Peabody Award winner. They're like really top level professionals in their fields as radio hosts. And when we approached them about doing something for a smart speaker, they were like, what do you mean? Smart speaker, how would that work? And to me, it was such a, it's like interactive radio. And that's how I kind of explained it to them. It's like what you do is just interactive. And I think we have to find ways of explaining that natural connection to musicians as well. That just as you said, musicians can interact with their fans. They can display new music, their brand new music. It could be great for discovery for musicians launching a new album. You get to hear little snippets and then you can go over and purchase the album. There is a startup out of Columbus, Ohio, and I can't think of the name. Do you know the name of
this? First AI, I think, is their, and they're doing Alexa for musicians, if I'm correct. Yeah.
Which I think is just brilliant. I learned about them at a voice lunch. I think what they're trying is brilliant, and it's puzzling to me why more musicians aren't latching on to this. It might be the record labels aren't sold on it yet, or they're worried about, I don't know, all the things that record labels are worried about on who gets paid and that kind of thing. But I think it's just a very natural platform for musicians. I also think it's a natural platform for music education and ear training, because music education and learning about chords and learning about how composers write and that kind of thing, it's a natural platform for that as well.
Use audio to learn about audio.
Yeah, exactly. I actually want to create a music education voice experience. I'm just having a hard time getting my team on board. I'm the only one that sees the brilliance in the idea, but I think there's something there.
Yeah, I think there's huge opportunity. Like I said, I'm surprised that musicians of the world haven't. And yes, what they're doing with Alexa for Musicians, super cool. But I think they'd be embracing this because it's passionate fans. Place where you have passionate fans, people love the idea of, and I'll put it in quotes, interacting with their favorite musician. Right? Okay. What? Because you could ask them a question, or they could put snippets of their latest music out, or even outtakes of like recording studio. People love that stuff. I think talk about a place where there's massive opportunity for the voice industry and massive untapped opportunity.
Yeah.
It's all around taking media like music and bringing it in. So I share with you the passion and the thought that there's a lot for the industry to do there. Hey, Sarah, I would be remiss if I didn't ask a question about Matchbox. A lot of people probably have. And that is, what's your business model? How is Matchbox making money?
Well,
the classic question.
That's a great question. So we are as surprised as anyone. Like I said earlier, we try anything and everything. We have tried every possible model. So when monetization was launched on Amazon Alexa, we tried consumables, we tried one-off purchases, we tried subscription. And what has worked well for us so far is subscription revenue. Matchbox has been built almost completely on subscription revenue. That's how powerful that model is. And I'm seeing more and more other startups and companies try that model. And it can work if it's the right opportunity for your particular voice experience. If it's something that people want to come back to day after day, and if you're providing them with a really good additional value to pay that small monthly fee. But I will say that's come from a lot of trial and error, a lot of pulling our hair out and like, oh my gosh, how are we going to make money on this? And how do we build a company off of this? So that's how we started, subscription revenue going very well. And now we're looking into ad revenue. So ad revenue on the podcast and in other things yet to be announced coming up.
Well, I'm excited to hear about them. And it's interesting. You said you tried a bunch of things. You tried a bunch of things with marketing. You tried a bunch of things with content. I mean, that seems to be a hallmark of what you've done is you go try a bunch of things and you see what works and build upon what works. And that's great. The subscription is working. And that is so synergistic with great content, right? Because you give me a little bit of content for free, but like I said, I want to hear that. I want to get that first question right and question of the day so I can hear the second question, right? An example of where great content makes me want to hear the more. So if there's something, you provide something for free, but if you pay a couple bucks a month, you get even more. I think
you
that's
get more really questions.
Easy.
Yeah.
Right.
You get, it's multiplayer. If you, so you get this whole package of benefits. If you pay just whatever it might be, $250, $295 a month, you get so much more where you can, it's more social, you join leaderboards, you can play with friends and family. But also if you just want to play for free and get one or two questions a day, we've got that for you too. I will say, I mean, you're right. We just try anything and everything. I'm a perfectionist and it's very painful for me to fail, to make a mistake, to fail, to try something and to see it fail. But I have, I feel like I've really grown since I've joined Matchbox in that we actually embrace failing. We embrace making those mistakes. And the most important thing when you make a mistake is how you recover from it. What can you learn from that mistake? It's not that the mistake happened. Everyone's going to make mistakes and we want to make those mistakes so that we learn from them. So that's what we really embrace is trying anything and everything. And if you fail here, fine, move on. Let's go try something else. We don't have time to dwell on our failures.
Hey, Sarah, I want to ask you, you've built a lot of great voice experiences and you've been peppering this talk with some advice for people building voice experiences. But do you have any other additional advice for someone who's just coming into the voice industry and is thinking about, well, what can I do to make this successful?
Yeah, so I have two thoughts. So the first is whatever you build, or even before you start building, you want to address a need or a want in the marketplace. Right? So you want to find opportunities in the marketplace. Is there something that users are mentioning that's not there that you can help with? Is there something that people don't know they need? Is there something that you experience in your own daily life where you're like, if only I had X to help me with that? That's like the spark of a lot of, I think throughout history, a lot of great inventions is like you realize as a user what you need and then you go and try to build it. And the second thought is you want to build something to help make someone's life easier or more enjoyable. So we try to put out good into the world. So everything we do, we try to help someone's day be a little better or a little easier. So Find My Phone greatly. I mean, it helps me every day when I lose my phone somewhere in my house. That's making my life easier. And hopefully things like Kids Quiz or Animal Rescue or Animal of the Day are making people's lives a little more enjoyable. The other thing is, and we've kind of touched on this, is striving for excellence in everything that you do, I guess, which is a lot easier said than done. But so if you're a really great developer, find someone who's really great at the thing that you're not great at. So identify what your own weaknesses are. It's super hard to do. It's hard to admit to yourself what you're not great at. Or if you're really great at content, find someone who can help you with design and to really like flesh out the overall experience. So at Matchbox, we have great engineers. I have an amazing content team. We've got people who really know about marketing, people who know about analytics, a diverse team in terms of experiences, backgrounds really helps make something stronger. So really go for finding people that flesh out what you're unable to do yourself.
That's such great salient advice. I would say look in the mirror and be honest about what you're good at and what you're not good at.
It's so hard.
It is so hard. But you're in a startup and anyone who's been in the startup world knows some of the best entrepreneurs I know, their big piece of advice is to hire what they're not.
Oh, yeah.
Hire what they're poor at, right? Figure out what you're not good at and then hire complimentary people around you because you got to fill it all in. It's very hard to say I'm not good at something, but be honest with yourself and then figure it out. What a great team when you get about everybody kind of synergistically, they all have strengths that all fit together in that puzzle and all together that fills all those puzzle pieces together.
Yeah.
That's awesome advice. What about any more advice? What about for people maybe who are, they've been in voice for a while, they built what they think are some great experiences and they're just not getting traction or they're kind of struggling with getting users. Any thoughts around that?
Oh, that's a good and difficult question. That's really difficult. So if you've been in the voice space for a while, you're not gaining traction. I think we kind of go back to what we were just talking about is to find folks who have a different perspective than you that maybe aren't so attached to the experiences that you've built that can give you honest feedback. And also market, get into marketing. You can't have a product and not have marketing. I don't care what kind of product it is, a car, like a mobile app, a voice app. You can't have success unless you have some success in marketing.
Yeah. So you're saying it's all fun to talk to your friends and fanboys or fangirls about what you've built, but you really want to talk to the cynics.
Right? Yeah. Those are
people who think, hey, this doesn't work or this is broken or that or do that and learn from them. And powerful, powerful message. Yes, you need to market. Marketing is part of a successful company. Hey, this is a Bixby podcast. I want to ask you just a couple of questions about Bixby. You are a fairly early adopter of Bixby. Yeah, question of the day is out on Bixby. How's that gone?
It's going quite well. What was really exciting to us is that the minute we launched, we were immediately available on millions of devices around the world. That's how amazing is that? And it's not just in one area or it's just immediately available all over. That was very exciting for us. It's very exciting to see our content on a device in a totally new way. And I think the whole Bixby platform is fascinating in that it brings together all sorts of different experiences on your device. And so you're able to access, it kind of connects the dots between all these different experiences, which is super cool. And I also think everything you guys are doing is pointing at the future. You're pulling us all into the future and that people are going to expect soon a voice, it's kind of a centralized voice assistant, or they're going to, so kind of what you were saying earlier, no matter what interface you're using, what platform you're using, people are going to start expecting to be able to access via voice. And that's what Samsung is doing. It's super exciting. You don't need just like one type of device. Bixby is available on all these different types of devices and even more I hear coming up. So that's exciting.
Well, that's great to hear. Yeah. I mean, that is one of the strategies of Samsung, right? Is to say we build 500 million devices a year. That's unmatched in the ecosystem. So put an assistant on all those. And if it makes that device easier and more fun or more useful,
to use,
then you're going to sell more devices, right? So it's kind of that happy circle, that virtuous circle that I was talking about earlier. So you mentioned all those devices. We're coming to TVs, watches, smart appliances. Well, you can lease for the watch now. And right now, we just announced the smart appliance of the refrigerator. You start developing for it and releasing there. And very soon, consumers will be able to enjoy that. So do any of those devices get you particularly excited? The watch, the TV, smart appliances?
Yeah, like all of them. So the watch and the TV in particular, that's really intriguing to me. I really think kind of what we just talked about, this is just showing that voice is going to be everywhere. I'm a fan of pop culture sci-fi. So like Star Trek, all the Star Trek iterations going back to the 1966 version late 60s, is everywhere. You're able to talk to your starship and soon we're going to be able to talk to our cars and our refrigerators and our watches and our TVs. So people are just going to, it's going to happen very soon. You guys are making this happen. People are just expecting to have this kind of centralized voice assistant helping them throughout their day. And everything that like Star Trek predicted, you guys are making happen. Can't wait to see what you do with the starships.
Ooh, breaking news. We weren't supposed to talk about the Starship program. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I totally agree with you. Just voice. I mean, there's going to be an expectation that you can talk to your tech, right? And it's really interesting. I have two teenage daughters, and I call them the touch generation because they expect everything to be touchable, right? Yeah. They grow up with touchable swipe that and things. And one of the reasons they like using their phones more than their Chromebooks they use is because it's all touch, right? And they can swipe and it's just natural to them. And I think you get a little younger generation and you're going to get the voice generation where they're kind of expecting you to be able to talk to anything and everything. And on the other hand, voice is really, really popular with older people because it's not a technology you have to learn. I had to learn to type. I had to learn to swipe. Voice, I learned as a baby. It's the most natural way to interact. So across generations, it's the most natural way to interact with technology. And it kind of really humanizes technology to me. And it's one of the reasons I'm in this industry is because I see that power of humanizing technology. And I could go on and on, wax on and on about that. But I think it's a super exciting future. Speaking about the future, what about in the next short term? Year or so, what are you excited about that you're hearing about, and or where would you like the industry to go in the next year or so?
Yeah, so I think multimodal is where things are going faster and faster. So voice technology, the current iteration of voice technology starts with just voice. And now we're seeing more and more users get interested in the more multimodal, so there's more graphics involved. So I think very quickly in the next year, that's just going to really ramp up. And I think developers are getting more and more tools that they can use to make that happen, to make things easier for them. So if they're not a graphic designer, there's still tools that they can use. They don't have to go out and hire a graphic designer. They can create things themselves. So that's the next big thing, as well as global companies becoming more invested in voice, and that I think marketing budgets are going to start having a line item for voice, right? You can't have a marketing strategy in a global company that doesn't include voice. So I think that's in the next year too.
Yeah, I think that's already happening. You hear about voice has moved out of the kind of innovation budget.
Yeah.
Right. And now you're getting into the marketing budget, which is a much, much bigger budget. Marketing budgets can be huge. And what I like about it being out of the marketing budget is we're talking about marketing earlier. Marketing is experimental. And people try a bunch of things. And I think we're the era of voices for companies. How do you interact with your customers using this new medium? I don't know if anyone's quite figured that out, but now's the time to go experiment and try it out and go figure out how customers want to interact with you as a company via voice.
Yeah, the consumer already has all these devices in their hand, on their desk, their refrigerator. The device is there. It's just waiting for these companies to provide valuable content on these devices.
Yep. Back to content. Content's king.
Yeah, it is.
How about projecting out a little further, 5 or 10 years? Where do you see voice going?
So kind of what we've talked about, it's going to be everywhere. You're going using the Star Trek analogy, you're going to have wearables, like more and more people are going to have wearables. It's voice assistant. It's going to be a centralized voice assistant in the home, in the car. If we ever return to offices, you'll see voice in office buildings. People are just going to expect it. And like you said, the next generation is just going to expect voice to be there. And it's funny because I remember when the touchable devices came out, and I remember seeing video of like a toddler who hadn't known life without the touchable devices going up to a TV screen and trying to like zoom in, zoom out. So I think the next generation, we're going to see toddlers going up to a refrigerator and starting talking to the refrigerator, expecting it to talk back. So that, I think that's not even 10 years out. That's like, that's 5 years out. That's that people are just going to expect this very soon.
Yeah. So ubiquitous, one of the ubiquitous ways of interacting with our technology, certainly not the only way, but you can just walk in your house. I like to think of that. You just walk in your house or your home or work and you talk and you're not even sure what device is listening or something, but you need something done or you want to entertain yourself. You want to play question of the day. I walk in my door and I want to play question of the day and I ask it and some device somewhere lets me play it and have some fun. Or I want to find my phone.
I want to find my phone. Where is my phone? I need to find it. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So Sarah, you've built a lot of voice experiences. You've seen a lot. Aside from Matchbox's voice experiences, what are one or two voice experiences you really like?
Yeah, I love Big Sky. Love, love, love it. Super helpful and useful. And Steve Arkonovich, the developer, just keeps digging down deeper and seeing what else he can add on. So I really like that one. I love SongQuiz. It's so fun, so easy to use. And Music Bop Adventures, which is created by my Matchbox colleague, Alarna. I loved Music Bop Adventures before I even met Alarna, before she was on our team. It's just fun and kind of silly and educational at the same time. And I think those are all really good uses of voice and kind of that whole audio experience.
That's great. Yeah. Stephen was an guest on the podcast a few episodes ago. And I loved his story. I'm not a weather geek. He made it clear. He's like, I just thought the weather experience wasn't that great. So I created my own for myself and then realized, wow, a bunch of other people really like this. And then he constantly iterates on that.
Yeah.
Constantly has built and rebuilt and listens to how people use it and listens to the criticism and takes this very practical thing and just makes it easier and easier and better to use.
He saw a need. He saw a need that wasn't being addressed. And so he addressed that need. I love it.
And you're right. SongQuiz. Great. Lots of fun. Lots of fun with different generations.
Yeah.
I love what Wally did there. And there are a lot of generational wars with my kids with SongQuiz. And I get, what's their generation? I get them mostly wrong, but I'm trying to improve in that. And you have such a gem in the industry with Alarna. She was an early guest in the podcast, and I love her. Talk about a combination of both technology skills and creativity. That is in one person, and that is highly unusual. She's great. Yeah.
She's brilliant, and I am thankful every day that she's my colleague, that we have her on our team. Because you're right, she has the perfect combination of the technical side, but also seeing the larger piece of the content and knowing what users want and knowing how to make it happen. And she's also just a fun person to know.
Yeah, super nice person. She is. She's great. So, hey, Sarah, if people want to keep in touch with you individually and or Matchbox, what's the best way to do so?
Yeah, so you can check out our website, matchbox.io. And you can find Matchbox and myself on Twitter and LinkedIn. So I'm Sarah Andrew Wilson, of course. And then Matchbox has accounts on Twitter and LinkedIn.
Great. And we'll definitely put those in the show notes. So I love what you guys have done and are doing. You're really kind of a beacon. Now, let me restate that. You are a beacon of creativity and success in the voice industry. And I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you. It's an honor to have been asked, and thanks for having me.
Well, I really enjoyed our conversation. And that's all, folks. This is Roger Kibbe from the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast signing off.